Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this will be a fun one.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. Please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, director, producer with Vanderklute Film and Television and Little Mammoth Media, Mr. Bill Vanderklute. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, Bill, you've been in the film and TV world for quite some time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen
almost four decades.
Four decades. So you've seen it evolve dramatically, I would imagine,
mm-hmm.
as just an industry. But what about here in Atlanta? How have you seen it change in the Atlanta market?
It's changed dramatically in the Atlanta market. When I first started my company here in 1976, it was a very small, sleepy market. Periodically, there would be a big commercial that would come into town to use some background or something for a day or two. There was a good amount of in what they called back then industrial films, mm-hmm. Which we now call, branded content or something like that. But basically, it was a small, sleepy market. And it slowly grew. And because people love the locations and the very skilled crews that we have here. So a lot of movies of the week came out, and a lot of national television commercials were growing. But as Canada and other states started film tax incentives, a lot of that work from out of town went elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really until right now, about 10 years ago, when a group of industry professionals really got together and urged over a multi-year period the investment tax incentives that are bringing film and video production here to Georgia in unprecedented numbers. I mean, literally, Georgia is the number one motion picture location in the world for motion picture production.
Number one.
Like over California. Not for TV, but for motion pictures that show in theaters, Georgia is number one.
Wow.
Which is pretty astounding.
Right. You couldn't have imagined that when you first started.
No. And even all of us, and there was a whole army of people who worked on crafting and lobbying for the tax incentives. There's no way that, I mean, you punch yourself and say, could we imagine that Riverwood Studios or something like that would be here in Georgia? And it just seems, it would have seemed beyond our wildest dreams at the time.
Now, why do you think that the film are flocking here? Is it solely because of those tax incentives? Because don't other states have tax incentives?
Yes, they do. I think there's a lot of explanation for why that's happening. First of all, our tax incentives are very good. They're up to 30%. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, the bottom line drives these companies. These are giant multinational companies. And if the tax incentives went, they would go too.
Right. They're not just staying for the grits.
No, they're not. However, Atlanta or Georgia has a lot to offer. And two major things that I think cause that. Number one is our airport. Time is money in any industry. And if you can get to, 640 different locations around the world directly from Atlanta, that's an amazing thing. You don't have to go through another feeder airport to get there. And second is a group of business people who are willing to risk capital in building all these stages, mm-hmm. and all these support companies. Because remember that the big studios are simply a real estate play. It's soundproof boxes that want high-paying short-term tenants.
Right.
And they don't get any tax incentives. There's no incentive there. They pay taxes. They hire people, which is part of the great aspect of the whole tax incentive, is that they're hiring people, they're paying taxes, they're paying property taxes, and they're risking that capital in hopes of getting a production coming in to rent that space.
And then once they have that space, then it's in their best interest to keep the thing filled.
Yes, it is. And that's what they're doing. In fact, as I understand it, there's even a lack of studio space.
A lack.
In other words, they're all full.
They're all full already. Yeah. And they just, it seems like they just keep building them.
Yep.
One right after the other. Now, for you, did you do film, or you were more doing TV or industrials? Like, what's your career been?
My career has been a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I've produced feature films. I have produced dozens of television documentaries. I've produced thousands of commercials and a number of branded contents, industrial films, a little bit of everything over the 40 years. Our company has done really a little bit of all of that.
And then recently you've moved into producing your own content.
Yes. We always have produced our own content, but also did sponsored content or with investors. But yes, we...
So that's what Little Mammoth Media is about?
Correct. Little Mammoth Media is a children's and family productions that show the way things work behind the scenes, from how they build a Mercedes to what's it like on an international plane flight. And so we've invested in that, and then we license them out and sell digital downloads and streaming.
And you're selling it directly to the consumer?
We do. And we also sell it to intermediaries, for instance, distributors that distribute to schools, libraries, museums, places like that.
So now when you're getting into that side of the business, was that new for you?
No, it wasn't, because when we started... you know, our whole industry has changed dramatically in the last, I mean, it's continually changing, but I mean, it's really changed significantly. When we first started with Little Mammoth Media, which was 25 years ago with the first one, we produced it because my kids wanted to know about airplanes.
Right.
And I was trying to find a video about it. And I couldn't find one that was any good. So I made one. And then I tried to sell it. And all the normal channels would say, well, for children's programs, you need a whole series. We can't sell a single one. But I talked to a small company called Amazon.com, and they said, yeah, we'll take one. And they took one, and they sold it. And the profits from that one paid for the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And once we had 13, we licensed it to television, and it's licensed in about 30 countries.
So then it becomes a show for them?
Yeah.
Or that's content for
them?
It's
content. Well, it's not just for them. They're really the ones selling it to the consumer.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what was that process like when you have your own thing? And because that's different. When someone hires you to do a project,
right,
you attack it a little differently, I would think.
Yes. Well, in many ways, ultimately, quality prevails. Storytelling prevails. I mean, if you can't do good storytelling, nobody's going to want your product. So, and it's the same with producing something for a client, for an ad agency, for a business, for a group of investors, because it's got to be a high quality product. So that's what we shoot for. But when we're doing these projects, a lot of this depends on finding the right access to things, because we go behind the scenes. On our latest one, we partnered with Delta Airlines and went behind the scenes on an international plane flight from Atlanta to London. So the challenge of getting behind the scenes, going underneath the runways where the baggage goes, going to in a flight simulator, or working with them, seeing flight attendant training, and then also at Heathrow Airport, going behind the scenes. All that takes a lot of coordination and planning.
And how do you get a Delta to sign on and partner with you?
Well, the same way we've done with other companies like Mercedes-Benz, like USA Today. We present our case, and we have a track record now. This is number 19 in the series, Little Mammoth series. It's high quality. We've won dozens of awards from parents groups and children's media groups. And it really is a great educational tool. And I think a lot of these companies want to be associated with that.
Right. Well, on number 19, I would imagine it's a lot easier. What was it like on the first one when there wasn't that track record?
It was more difficult. A lot more difficult.
So how were you selling it to them when they didn't have a track record?
With great difficulty. I mean, it's like doing anything. You find someone to be an advocate inside the organization, in a sense. If you can sell one person, who has a voice inside there that says, you know, this is something that will benefit us, right, our organization, because after all, everyone has to win in this or sure, else it doesn't work. And so once you do that, then you move up the chain and finally get someone to say yes.
And then now, Mammoth, is that primarily this big series? Is that,
yes,
the big adventure?
The big adventure series.
Mm-hmm. And that's the primary activity in Mammoth?
Yeah, it's called Little Mammoth.
Little Mammoth.
Yes, that's what Little Mammoth does right now.
And then, so are there other kind of ancillary, like that's the children's, are you going to go into other directions or just stay in your lane there?
I think we're going to stay with the children's and family space because we've really built a brand there. We're looking at books right now. We're talking to publishers about doing a books on the series. And we're also looking, of course, at other subjects for Little Mammoth programs.
And then, so how does that come about? How do you come up with your ideas for different topics for the... do you call them shows? What do you call them?
They're programs. They're as long as they're 1 hour television shows. They're right. 44 minutes. So no, coming up with ideas is not the hard part. I figure if I'm interested in it, a 5-year-old will be interested
right,
in it.
So does that say something about you?
Wow, yeah, maybe it does. But I mean, it really is. I say, you know, wouldn't it be cool to, you know, go on an aircraft carrier?
Right.
Or wouldn't it be cool to go on a submarine? Or what's it like at Yellowstone National Park behind the scenes? And so that sort of thing. And obviously, you know, you get a lot of closed doors. But eventually you find someone who'll say, yeah, we'll work with you. Let you photograph.
Have you tried to go into like kind of like Legoland or Disney or theme park kind of things?
We actually did. We almost did Legoland. But at the last minute, they decided to do it themselves. We may have given them the idea.
They're like, hey, why don't we?
Well, I mean, that's also the risk you run because, you know, I mean, they could do it themselves.
Right.
That happens with radio shows sometimes, doesn't it?
Yes. So for you, what's the most rewarding part of the process? Is it coming up with the ideas? Is it seeing it in your hand like you are now?
I think really the most rewarding part is... Mm. The emails I get from total strangers. For example, on the first big plane trip that we did 25 years ago, I've gotten an email from a Lufthansa pilot who said he became a pilot because he watched the video.
Wow.
And 2 years ago, I was filming The Big Freeze, which is another program in the series. And I was on a Coast Guard icebreaker in Lake Huron in February. And one of the crew guys, came up to me while I was filming and said, did you work on The Big Submarine? And I said, yeah, I created it. And he said, well, you know, that's what inspired me to join the Coast Guard and go out to sea. And so those are the kind of things that really are more rewarding than, you know, almost anything else.
Now, in your career in film, are you itching to do like a big blockbuster movie? Like, did you have any aspirations in that area?
I've done feature films before, and yes, it would be wonderful to do a $100 million blockbuster, but there's something very nice about doing documentaries where you have more control, mm-hmm. and you're really telling stories, the stories that you want to tell with pictures. And that to me is actually more rewarding than being in a giant factory where 1,000 people are telling you all the different things you need to do.
Now, when you do a documentary, is that something that, are you hired sometimes just to do a play a role in someone else's documentary, or at this stage in your career, everything you're doing is kind of your own vision and your own show?
Well, when people hire me to do it, they certainly when I'm hired to do a sponsored project, we know the story we need to tell, but the reason they hire me is to do the storytelling, mm-hmm. is to tell the story in a compelling way that audience will relate to.
And so the rules of storytelling, are they the same, whether it's a commercial, a documentary, or a children's video?
There are no rules, only ideas that work. But I'll tell you, good storytelling, you can spot it anywhere. And it isn't necessarily... you need to do this, or this needs to be a wide shot or close up, or there are no real rules there. It's just and it's kind of an ephemeral thing to say what makes a good novel or what makes a good movie. It's really the storytelling and how that's done, and it takes people with experience and talent to do it.
But how do you identify like what the emotional hook is, or what's the thing that's going to grab someone?
Well, that's the challenge of every project. You've got to find what actually will grab an audience. And in film, and I use film to as a generic term to cover all these digital formats, is it really needs to hit you here in your heart first. It needs to reach you on an emotional level, not an intellectual level. I think a lot of people make the mistake of saying, well, we need to do these three things and make sure the audience understands this. And a lot of times it comes off as a PowerPoint. You know, it just, it doesn't resonate.
So, but how do you find that emotional? Are there certain emotions that you go to time and time again, or certain?
No, I think every project's different. That's what I love about this business, is you don't say, oh, well, we need to use this word or this kind of music cue or this kind of picture, you know, put a dog in it, you know, it isn't like that. I mean, I don't think if you ask a novelist what really makes a good novel, they wouldn't say, well, boy meets girl and this happens. Every project is different. And that's what really keeps my passion going about this industry, is because every project I go into, it's different. And I have to find the best way to tell that story.
Now, in the big plane,
the new big plane trip,
because there was a first big plane trip.
Yeah, but things have changed in 25 years.
So this is the one that's international?
Yes.
And so what was at the heart of that? What is the emotion that you wanted to convey in that story?
What I really wanted to convey there is that a group of people, that this things that we take for granted involve an entire group of people working together as a team to make it all happen. And they use all their different skills and abilities to work together to make it happen. And hopefully that will inspire young audiences to look at not only careers in aviation, but understanding the concept of teamwork.
Mm-hmm. When you do those films, is there a child actually a character in it, or it's always the behind the scenes kind of how it's done?
It's a behind the scenes how it's done, but there are child narrators.
Okay, the narrators are children.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not acting children.
No, they're
acting.
Not on camera. It's all right. Voiceover.
That has to be unique. I don't know that I've seen or heard that before, with a child narrating. That's a little unusual.
It is. We were certainly the first ones to do that.
Wow.
So when we did the first one, they're all narrated by children.
How about
what age children?
Well, it kind of depends, because we need someone that sounds like kids,
right,
but have really good diction. So a lot of times it's young girls that do it. And mm-hmm. and I think the young girl here who did it is, I believe, 10 or 11. She's very good. And then the young boy who did it is from Atlanta, actually. And I think he's 8 or 9 years old. And they're both just terrific.
Wow. So I'm interested to hear your counsel on the balance between practicing your craft and running the business. Or maybe it doesn't have anything to do with balance. I don't know. But I think our listeners would be interested to hear that as well. How you do that?
Well, it's with great difficulty, and I think any business owner would tell you that you have to be focused on it, maybe not 24 hours a day, but almost every waking hour. You need to be in some way thinking about the business. And I built my company, and there's another company that you didn't mention there that I founded and started, called Magic Lantern, which is a post-production house and studio. And building that and having a number of employees, I mean, at one point we had 38 employees. So you are constantly dealing with the studio, the physical studio, dealing with clients, dealing with employees, and they're all really creative people. So they have all sorts of different needs and equipment, you know, your technology. It has sometimes the staying power of fresh fruit. So you're constantly having to upgrade and invest capital in it. So you're dealing with all those things at once. And I actually love it. I didn't take any business courses. I wish I did, because I learned the hard way. But I tried my best to do, you know, to build the company. And about a few years ago, I sold the studio, the Magic Lantern portion of the business, to somebody else who kept all the employees and kept the business going. So at that point, I almost made a full circle down to the way I started the business by producing my own projects, which is what I'm doing now.
So now, when you're wearing kind of two hats, one, the creative person that, you know, anything goes, where every idea is good at this stage, to the business person where math is very important and counting things and making sure we're on budget and things like that. How do you kind of marry those two skills? Are you the same person that does that? You're the visionary and the person that actually...
Yes, because really without a strong financial underpinning, you can't do the creative stuff. And by being the director on the set when we're, doing a commercial or something where I'm constantly aware of how much things cost and whether or not, oh, do we need to go to an hour or two of overtime here to get this shot? How can we do this? How can we be as efficient as possible? And so many of the people I work with also have that mindset. You know, we don't want to spend money needlessly, but we need to spend it where it all shows on the screen.
Right. But part of the challenge is when you're dealing with a lot of creative people, they're kind of flaky sometimes.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word flaky. Although I think that's true of some people. I've just been very fortunate to surround myself with people who are very, very creative, but also very grounded. I know people would come to me and say, well, so-and-so just got this new XYZ machine. And, but you know, there's another one out there that does the same thing and it's much cheaper. Why don't we look at that one instead of just saying, I want this
or
I want that.
The
latest right. and the greatest. And so I think you really build a culture of a company from the top. And so our creativity was focused on basically keeping our clients happy and keeping the business, solvent.
Right. So it sounds like the level of professionalism was kind of a must-have when you were choosing the people you work with, rather than maybe you don't choose the most creative person who is a little less disciplined and maybe has some bad habits that a more professional person you would rather be working with.
I like working with adults.
Right. And
that's
this
a
industry
good rule.
Has some that, you know, talented people that maybe aren't as adult-like as others.
Right. And I think the studios can afford to pay for those.
Right. Now, how do you see these new technologies coming into play, virtual reality, augmented reality, things like that?
Well, I really think that when people say, you know, what's changed in your business, I say, you know, in one way, nothing's changed. I mean, you're still having a camera, whether it's film, digital, virtual, whatever. And you're still having something happen in front of the camera and you're telling stories with pictures. But aside from that, everything has changed. And I think we're very poor at predicting the future. And who knows? I mean, 20 years ago, no one would have said, oh yeah, well, 40% of the people who watch movies are going to be watching them on a little screen that they carry in their pocket.
Right.
I mean, and so virtual reality, who knows where that's going to go? I mean, it's such an exciting thing. And who knows whether it'll be movie theaters, whether it'll be glasses that you wear. I mean, it's the sky's the limit and it's exciting, but ultimately it comes down to storytelling because no matter how cool the technology is, nobody's going to want to sit through something that isn't interesting or it right. isn't captivating.
Right. If you can't tell a compelling story, it doesn't matter what kind of bells and whistles that come with it.
Exactly.
Now, for you, do you feel an obligation that I got to know something about virtual reality? I got to know something about augmented reality. I have to at least play with this in order to stay relevant?
Yes. I try all sorts of different things all the time. And There are a number of industry conferences each year that showcase some of the newest technologies, and I go to those and you know, learn about the new technologies. And when they're at a stage where I feel they fit with one of the projects we want to do, we'll use them.
Mm-hmm. Now, do they ever consult you in the sense that, hey, we want to do some, we have to have something to show people in this new space? Let's call the Vanderkloot guys and see if they can help us create some content that we can put inside of the goggles or in the... Mm-hmm.
We have done that in the past, not with virtual reality, mm-hmm. but certainly in the past when different technologies moving ahead.
So is that something that's interesting to you, or is it something you keep your eye on, or you're focused on, you know, big adventures?
I'm really focused right now on big adventures. Mm-hmm. And when the technology gets to the point where it can augment our storytelling, then we'll start
talking, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so what do you got going on next? What's next on the agenda for you?
Well, the next one may be about SpaceX.
There could be rockets
in the future.
So now, is that in play, or you're talking about it? Or
well, it's we're working on it.
Wow, that's exciting.
And there's a number of documentaries that I'm working on too, including one. You know, you always have a number of projects going because raising money is a constant
challenge.
That's
another fun part of your job, right?
It is. We're doing one on right now on Harmon Killebrew, a famous baseball player from the 60s and 70s.
So a story, did that come to you, or their family came to you, or how did that come about?
Well, they came to me, and we're joint venturing to get it started.
Mm-hmm. And so have you done a sports project before?
Oh yeah. Well, we created the film, the official bid film for the 1996 Atlanta Olympic Games.
Okay. So this is in your wheelhouse.
So what he does works, because, you know, we did have the Olympics.
That's it. It's that simple. He's undefeated Olympics videos. And then, so you got the Harmon Killebrew, you got the Big Adventures series. That seems like a full plate there. But
it is.
Are you still doing like commercials, still doing that stuff as well?
I really don't do commercials anymore. But a few really good clients periodically call me to do some specialized projects.
So you still have the Vanderkloot films.
And television and Little Mammoth Media.
Those are your two things that you're working on right now. All right. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you on either one, what are the coordinates?
Vanderkloot.com or littlemammoth.com.
And then they can find probably a lot of the content.
You can download any of the content off littlemammoth.com, but it's also on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Prime, and a number of different Vimeo and a number of different retailers.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.